I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councillor Passero, who is away on a personal commitment, and Councillor Zanko, who is away on a work commitment.
Thank you. A few brief announcements. There's no addendum, but I did want to mention that with respect to the public meeting and report PDS 27-2017, the last name of the applicant is actually spelled B-E-R-R-Y as opposed to B-A-R-R-Y. So that can be corrected, I presume, by staff as we proceed further. In connection with announcements, Saturday, April the 15th, was a hopping day down on Jarvis Street in Fort Erie. We had the official opening of Savory Bean at 102 Jarvis Street. It's a coffee shop, bake shop, and while it's been in operation for a year, had a large turnout, very successful day, and it looks like they're doing very well. Councillors Nutt and McDermott were with me to represent the municipality. And then in the evening, the Faith Salon celebrated its 50th anniversary. The hairstylist and spa now, because Atrium Spa is located there, and it celebrated its 10th anniversary. But Faith Salon was originated by Mr. Salvatore as Reno's, and many people would have known that. It was located in a house on Jarvis Street, which has now been completely renovated to the extent of several hundreds of thousands of dollars. Three fantastic apartments overhead, and the place was packed Saturday evening. And again, Councillor McDermott was there, and a large number of individuals from the community, people that have supported these businesses over the years. So 10th anniversary for the Atrium Spa, 50th anniversary for Faith Salon, a great evening, and all part of I mentioned both these two events because they're all part of the rejuvenization that's taking place on Jarvis Street in Fort Erie. And part of that will involve long-term commitments from the municipality. They've had great support from not only the ward councillor, Councillor McDermott, but from the other councillors as well. I've seen them there many times when there have been activities and events and openings, and they're to be commended, as are the young entrepreneurs, mostly young entrepreneurs, who have been doing the work there. Coming up on Thursday, the town of Fort Erie will be conducting its work day for the Habitat for Humanity build on Crescent Road. And that is for the whole day. I know that there's a large workforce of town workers. I'm guessing that Kelly Walsh will be there. Good. So a lot of work will get done. And that's really moving along quite nicely. That evening, the Chamber of Commerce and the EDTC have their annual meeting at the Buffalo Canoe Club. It's the annual general meeting for both of them. It'll be very well attended as usual, and as usual, the weather should be good, and it typically is. And then next Saturday is Earth Day, and there are a number of cleanups going on throughout the town. I know that there's one at Waverly Park. There's one at Empire Loyalist Park in Stevensville. John Brandt School is having an Earth Day, and they're going to be dedicating a portion of their property to an environmental outdoor classroom. And that takes place between 10 and 3. Loyalist Park is between 12 and 3. I think Waverly cleanup is sometime around then. And then I know that there are other cleanups throughout the municipality, so that if there's anyone that has an opportunity to participate, I would encourage you to do so, because it's a great opportunity for us to recognize the importance of the environment in our community. Those are the announcements. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary? Oh, before I go there, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm proud to announce that on May 20th, 2017, we're going to host our second party on the patio. This year's theme is Fire and Ice, and the doors open at 5:30 with festivities beginning at 6 o'clock. Tickets can be purchased online on Eventbrite. All you have to do is type in Eventbrite, Party on the Patio, Fire and Ice, and then you can either buy a table or single tickets individually. They're going fast. We're 40% sold already with a little more than a month to go. So that's good news. We're going to be featuring three performances. We have the Almost Hip, Westwind, and of course the Associates, which is our feature band for the evening. But we also have, traveling down from Boston, a company called A Different Spin, and they are going to be putting on a fire performance, which is going to be 40 minutes in length and is going to pick members of the audience to assist them with that performance. So it's going to be a good time, and tickets are going fast, so buy them now. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. So you're suggesting that if you don't want to be part of the performance of that group from Boston, you stay away from the stage. Perfect. Okay, are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest to Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a conflict with IS-14-2017 as my company does business with Circle P Paving.
Are there any others? I have a similar, Councillor Knight.
Yes, I have a conflict on the same report.
Well, that's interesting, Madam Clerk, because I do as well. That will leave two councillors to deal with that. And since we're in committee, only one of them has to move the report. One can chair the meeting, one can move the report, and then they can both vote, and hopefully they won't tie. But I'm not participating in that discussion because I also have a conflict with respect to that. My son-in-law works for Circle P, which is one of the successful bidders in IS-14-2017 and a bidder on the other component of that report. And I also have a conflict with respect to the public meeting relative to the rezoning application with respect to Roy Berry and PDS 27-2017 because my law firm has done work for Mr. Berry. So the public meeting I will ask Councillor Butler to chair, and we're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. If there are no other disclosures of pecuniary interest, then I'll just make note of a public meeting that's forthcoming. That will be a zoning bylaw amendment for 3823 Terrace Lane to be heard Monday, May the 1st, 2017 at 6 p.m. here in the Town Hall Council Chambers. And the administrative report with respect to that will be available on Wednesday, April 26th, 2017 on the town's website. That takes us to public meetings and Councillor Butler, I wonder if you would take over the meeting. This is pursuant to statutory requirement and the Planning Act.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. So we have a public meeting this evening regarding property rezoning, regarding Roy Berry, who is the owner, Frank Renda and Marcello Petrella is the applicant, Alan Haywood the agent. 3303 Dominion Road, the proposed amendments will change the zoning from residential 1 R1 zone to neighborhood development and D zone. And I believe, Mr. Kernahan, you are going to speak to this evening.
Thank you, Councillor Butler, and good evening, councillors. A zoning bylaw amendment application was received from Al Haywood on behalf of Frank Renda and Marcello Petrella, the applicants, and Roy Berry, who is the owner of 3303 Dominion Road. I should note that we have changed the spelling of Mr. Berry's name in the presentation and will move that correction forward in any communications subsequent to this meeting. Purpose of the proposed zoning bylaw amendment is to permit the severance of a vacant portion of this property so it can be merged with the adjacent parcel and developed as part of a plan of subdivision in the future. The existing house on the property and the lands to the west will continue in their current use as a single detached dwelling lot. Both the severed parcel that will be merged with the lands to the east and the remnant parcel that contains the dwelling are significantly larger than the R1 zoning which applies to them requires. In order to ensure that the oversized parcels will be developed in an efficient manner in the future, it is proposed that they be rezoned to a neighborhood development ND zone at this time. Neighborhood development ND zone does not permit the construction of any new dwellings or any further division of the land without a future, without further council approval. Notification of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing an ad in the March 23rd, 2017 edition of the Times, and notice of the complete application and public meeting was mailed on that same date. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Ridgeway Thunder Bay neighborhood on the south side of Dominion Road. Land surrounding the subject site comprise the following uses. To the north is Dominion Road and single detached dwellings. To the south are single detached dwellings and vacant residential land. To the east is the unopened Gordon Avenue road allowance, as well as additional lands of the applicant. And to the west is a single detached dwelling. Subject property is designated low density in the Ridgeway Thunder Bay secondary plan. Secondary plan states that lands with this land use designation are intended for single detached, semi-detached, and duplex dwellings. Proposal to change the zoning to permit the creation of a new lot for subdivision development is consistent with this land use designation. This slide shows the natural heritage features on and in the vicinity of the subject property. As you can see, there are none. The NPCA has confirmed that the proposed zoning bylaw amendment will not impact any natural heritage features in the area. As I mentioned, the subject property is currently zoned R1, which permits single detached dwellings on lots with a minimum frontage of 18 meters and a minimum lot area of 600 square meters. This zoning bylaw amendment proposes to rezone the subject property to a site-specific neighborhood development zone that will permit the proposed severance but will not permit any future land division or development. The part which will be part of a future application for draft plan of subdivision will also require a zoning bylaw amendment at the time of the draft plan of subdivision application. Should the future owner of the dwelling at 3303 Dominion Road wish to develop this property, it too would require a zoning bylaw amendment to reflect whatever desired lot configuration is proposed. This slide shows a sketch of the subject property and the lot lines of the proposed severance. The proposed rezoning applies to both parts 1 and 2. Part 2 will continue in its current use as a single detached dwelling lot. Part 1 will merge with lands identified as lots 1250, 1245, 1230, and 1231, which are also owned by the applicants Frank Renda and Marcello Petrella. These lands, as well as additional lands on the east of Gordon Avenue, which are also owned by the applicants, will be developed through a future application for draft plan of subdivision and zoning bylaw amendment. This is a photograph of the portion of the subject lands which will be merged with the additional lands of the applicant looking south from Dominion Road. This is a picture of the dwelling on 30 with the address 3303 Dominion Road and the lands to the west. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kernahan. I'd like to ask if the applicant or agent wishes to speak. Can you just state your name for the record, please?
Councilor Butler, my name is Al Haywood. I'm the agent on the property and members of council. Not sure, should I address you as chair or acting mayor? Or but either case, we have come to this point tonight after several months of talking with the planning department. We originally wanted to just apply for a consent application on the property to merge it with their existing property and then apply for rezoning and subsequent subdivision through the normal process for a subdivision application. Through the consultations with Mr. Kernahan in the planning department, we met a couple of times, and his point on the whole application was that they would like to rezone the lands residential development first so that they could control the development. And we had gone down the road of, well, we're going to make a subdivision anyway. Let's just do the consent and we'll rezone it at the time of the subdivision. But because of the planning department's, I guess, policy or plans that they have for this area through the secondary plan, they would like to control development by the rezoning of both the subject parcel that will be the consent and the future parcel that is the remnant. That contains the house and the westerly portion of the land shown as part two. So going down this road, we didn't want to make an application for rezoning. However, that's where we're at, and we're fully supportive of the report that's been presented to you. We have no objections to this route that we're taking. We understand that it creates an extra rezoning application for us, but to appease the town, we've decided to follow the desires of the planning department. So to that end, we are fully supportive of the report. Should you wish to recommend approval of that report tonight, we did become aware of an objection at the 11th hour. Personally, I found it at 2:22, received from Matt Kernahan, and I believe council has received that as well. Okay, so I would like to address a few of those issues if it would appease council.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
So in a letter dated April 18th, today, received, apparently the objectors have a firm purchase of agreement and sale on the westerly portion. Could I get a slide that shows the proposed development or proposed consent? That, thank you. So apparently they have a firm purchase agreement for part two. However, part two doesn't even exist yet. The consent application has only been filed. It has not been approved. So how an offer could be done on that that is firm and binding without condition to a consent is a little bit beyond me, but I'm not a lawyer, and I don't pretend to be. But it would bring into question how an offer on a purchase or sale part two, when part one and two are one piece of land at this time, could happen. So I do think that part two can't exist unless we go through this process of a rezoning at the desire of the town, and then a subsequent consent to create the two parcels, part one to merge for the future subdivision that we're contemplating, and then part two would be a purchase and sale of a remnant parcel. There was a public meeting held for this. There was no attendance by anyone. Mr. Berry, if he was in a agreement of purchase and sale over part two, I would think would have had an obligation to present that public meeting notice to the potential purchasers, but apparently he did not. As far as paragraph three with regard to the agreements, I believe the agreements are totally unrelated. One is for an agreement of purchase and sale of a property. The other is for rezoning of a property. So if the town had to be aware of every offer of purchase and sale or any unregistered agreements on every rezoning or subdivision application that came along, I don't think there would be anything happening because there would be fear of lawsuits or anything that, you know, if it's not on title, I don't believe you could possibly be aware of it unless you were made aware of it, and we certainly weren't. With regard to their paragraph four, we do have an authorization provided by Mr. Berry, and they said that it shouldn't have happened, but we have authorization, and that's why we're here tonight. So bottom line is, if we don't get the rezoning, which is the desire of the town, then there would be, we would apply for a consent, but I guess the town wouldn't. Rezoning, the condition of the consent would be that rezoning occurs. So I would ask that you approve the rezoning based on the desires of the report and the recommendation of your planning department, and we would move forward with a consent that would allow both parties to complete their transactions. I would be available for any questions that council might have.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Councillor Nutt.
A question for Matt, Mr. Kernahan, if he's available. Just for the benefit of the people at home, can you explain the difference between an R1 zoning and an ND zoning, the neighborhood development?
The primary difference is that R1 zoning permits single detached dwellings and lots with a minimum frontage of 18 meters and 600. Minimum frontage of 18 meters, an area of 600 square meters. Neighborhood development permits only existing single detached dwellings. You're not permitted to create additional lots and build additional single detached dwellings without a rezoning when something is zoned ND zone.
Thank you. Any other members? Okay, then I would like to ask if anybody wishes to address council that is for the rezoning. Anybody that is opposed? Come to the podium and state your name and your address, please.
Hi there. My name's Arnie Runge. Myself and my wife live at 3217 Thunder Bay Road, Ridgeway. We have the purchase agreement on part two. So I just wanted to read the letter here again that we had sent to Matt earlier today. It says, as you may or may not be aware, we have a firm purchase agreement and all conditions have been waived. Copy included and not made public. It's just our, I think you have a copy of that as well. For the remnant parcel known as Part 2 on the proposed rezoning amendment for 3303 Dominion as an R1 zoned property. We object to the proposed rezoning of 3303 Dominion Road as this proposed rezoning will create an amendment to the contract that has never been agreed to by the buyer and the seller as the purchase contract is for an R1 zoning. The application for the rezoning of 3303 Dominion is premature, as 3303 Dominion is subject to another agreement, our agreement with Roy Berry, the agreement for the purchase of lands known as Part 2 in this proposed rezoning, with an R1 zoning, not an ND zoning. The applicants should not have submitted an application on land for which we have a contract if Roy Berry has given his consent to the applications to rezone 3303 Dominion, then this is a fundamental breach of contract to give other people the right to rezone the property he gave us the right to pursue. This application is defunct and does not give a complete picture of what is happening with this land. It is our opinion and belief that the town's planning department and council should not move forward with the proposed rezoning of 3303 Dominion Road. My wife is going to say something as well.
Hello. My name is Sherry Rustin, and Arnie already explained to you where we reside. We met briefly with some of the stakeholders prior to this meeting. And in the course of this meeting, Mr. Al Haywood, land surveyor, told us that without a severance, we have no contract. We would disagree, and so would our lawyer, Steve Latinovich. In fact, we would state that Mr. Haywood's clients have no contract without a severance. We actually have provisions in our contract to protect for this. So if you, our contract's provided there for you. We actually, as well, we would question the validity of consent and suspect that the agent and his applicants are working with an expired contract. We have never seen this contract, although we have requested this contract. We would recommend that council consult their lawyers with our purchase agreement and notice of fulfillment, as well as the applicant's purchase agreement prior to committing to rezoning 3303 Dominion Road. Mr. Haywood would also say that these two properties are unrelated. Within our contract, I explained that we do have provisions for if this property is not severed, and that is our first right of refusal to purchase Part 1, as well as our contract for Part 2. So we would really hope that you take the time to look at our contract as well as the applicant's contract. And as we are also not lawyers, as Mr. Haywood stated earlier, we feel that all attorneys should meet and gather more information prior to making a decision of the rezoning tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Breston. Does any member of council have any questions for Ms. Breston and Mr. Runge? Councillor.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just one question. I'm getting really confused here, so bear with me. You have a purchase and sale agreement from Roy Berry?
And a fulfillment, yes.
And
a notice of fulfillment.
When did you execute that purchase?
We entered into an agreement with Mr. Berry on January 20th, and the property was put up for sale on January 16th, I believe, of this year. from January.
So he put it up for sale on the 16th?
I believe, yes, he did. I believe it was the 16th or the 17th of January.
And what did he put up for sale, part two?
That was part two. Part one, I believe, was put up for sale in December of 2016, but I don't know absolutely about that.
This is where I'm getting confused.
Sure.
Somebody's telling me that part two doesn't exist yet until the severance takes place.
Our contract actually says possibilities of severance. It's not based on severance.
And who's doing the severance? Mr. Barry?
We don't know because we have not been given their contract, so we actually don't know who has provided consent, who consent has been provided to, and when their contract actually is valid until.
Now, where's Mr. Barry stand with your purchase sale agreement? He still honors that?
Mr. Barry, through his agent, Phil Smith, has explained that he never received a purchase agreement from his real estate agent for part one, that he has requested this purchase agreement and that he is not in possession of that. From my understanding, there was a falling out with that real estate agent for part one, and that's why Phil Smith from Royal LePage was given the real estate, given the listing for part two.
Okay, thanks.
I know.
I think I'm getting there, but okay. I probably have to talk to Mr. Haywood a little bit, ask him a couple questions. But
sure, if you need any further, we'd be glad to answer your questions.
Don't leave yet. No, that's okay. Councillor Lubitz, do you mind if I ask the other councillors if they have questions first before you ask Mr. Haywood? Does any other councillor have any questions? No? Okay, then. Thank you very much. And I believe that councillors do have questions for Mr. Haywood and for Mr. Kernahan. So if you could both approach the podium, please. Councillor Lubitz, did you want to pose your questions, please?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just so I can get a little better handle on Mr. Haywood, right? You have a purchase and sale for part one and part two?
We have a bona fide offer of purchase and sale on part one since June 2016. Still valid. But I honestly don't know what an agreement of purchase and sale has to do with a rezoning of land. That's all we're here for, is to rezone the land with the authority of Mr. Barry. The offers of purchase and sale, I don't think really council needs to get involved with. I think we're just talking about a rezoning of land.
Yes, but I think the problem that we're running into is we're being asked to rezone some property that somebody has a purchase and sale of. They're claiming that there is no purchase and sale on your part.
Through you, Acting Chair, that Mr. Barry has consented to the rezoning of all his land.
Yes, I understand that, but I don't see Mr. Barry here tonight. So I can't confirm that from Mr. Barry.
But we did submit an authorization.
Just one more question. Is there any reason why you didn't provide the other party with a copy of your purchase and sale?
Personally, I just got this letter at 2:22 today through an email. I have not been privy to any discussions with the objector until Mr. Kernahan sent me that email at 2:22, which I read about 2:45.
Mr. Barry didn't explain to you that he had agreed to a...
No, sir.
Okay, all right.
Do you have any further questions, Councillor? No. Do any other councillors have any further questions? No. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Are there any other parties that wish to speak opposed? You can come down. If you could state your name and your address for the record, please, Mr. Poole.
Jim Poole, 3811 Webstock Road. I'm kind of confused here too, but I got a question. Is it's R1 zoning? Aren't you allowed to sever into R1 zoning more lots? That's the question I have in my Cunningham. I don't know what they're saying. Like, if you're changing the zoning from R1 to subdivision zoning, and we have somebody wants to take the piece of property and divide it into R1 zoning, basically what I did my property on Webstock Road, I don't want to see what the problem is. Why are we changing the zoning on this when it's already R1?
Thank you. Mr. Brady, can you answer that question for us, please?
Certainly, I'll attempt to. This property, all of it, is part of a larger secondary plan for that area. And that secondary plan outlines how we would like the area to develop to ensure that it's developed in a comprehensive manner, that the roads are built in the right locations and that the infrastructure is put in the right locations. So the people who have applied for the rezoning on behalf of the owner of the property would like the part that they would like so they can amalgamate it with other holdings that they have so that they could develop a larger draft plan, a subdivision. So to ensure that that occurs, the town wants to make sure that the council has the ability to control that, and the way to do that is through the rezoning that's before us today. That will provide the maximum control to the council to ensure that the subdivisions that come forward are dealt with in a proper fashion, rather than, and I would point out the difficulties that we got into where severances were occurring on Prospect and Nye, and we don't want that to occur again, where we end up with what could have been multiple lots in an area, and we've now ended up with two, and infrastructure, which has a gap as it moves towards other properties further along. So the prudent way, in my opinion, to deal with this property was to rezone it in the fashion that it is, allow the one party to amalgamate theirs, and then the other party, when they have decided what they want to do, they have to bring a comprehensive package back to the town to show how it will be developed and to ensure that it conforms to the secondary plan. Hence the reason.
So my question is, I'm looking at this, and I kind of understand it. Why couldn't we just take it, put part one, MD zoning, whatever it's going to be for subdivision, and leave part two as R1 zoning? Why can't we do that? Why do we have to change the whole thing when somebody wants to buy it as R1 zoning?
Mr. Brady?
Through you, from a staff position, the lot that is being created with the house on also has developable possibilities. It has the possibility, it's about an acre in size, and it can also be further subdivided. And we want to ensure that the subdivision that occurs on that property is in conformity with the official plan and the secondary plan and meets good planning principles. If we simply allow it to stay as R1, Then you're right. They could come in and chop it up in severances, and those severances would not necessarily meet the secondary plan, nor would they necessarily maximize the use of the property and the infrastructure on the property. So the prudent way to move forward is to have all the property rezoned to development holding, which the current owner of the property has agreed to. The current owner of the property, as part of his application, agreed that all of the property would be rezoned to development holding. The Rungis, who have come forward this evening, are not owners of the property. And, in fact, as Mr. Haywood has pointed out, there won't be two properties until the rezoning is finalized and the severance is finalized.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Mr. Poole, do you have any other questions that you'd like to address?
My comment is that the person that owns that property, like you say, it's R1 zoning. You can't force somebody. They own the property. If they want to sever into two R1 zonings, it should be allowed, or one R1 zoning, whatever the other one's going to be. To me, I understand what Mr. Brady's saying, but it's kind of confusing. I'm sure you're confused as much as I am, but if it is R1 zoning, I know how I feel about that. I'm for R1 zoning in our town to stay as much as possible, even though the staff is trying to push the other direction, and that's the only reason I'm here, and I know you guys understand that.
Thank you. Does any member of council have any comments or questions of Mr. Poole?
Thank you very much.
Any other members of the audience? Seeing none, then I will return the chair back to you, Your Worship. I declare this public meeting closed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. very well managed. That takes us to the consent agenda, and at least report IS 14-2017 has to come out of the package because of the pecuniary interest claimed by Councillors Butler, Nutt, and the Mayor. So, Councillor Lubbers, when we get to that, can I hand the chair to you? Okay, are there any other reports that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda package? Councillor Lubbers.
Yes, just for some clarification here on the conflicts, seems to me that there's two parts to the report, and I'm wondering if we could separate the two parts, because I don't believe that Councillor Butler and Councillor Nutt would have a conflict on the other portion.
The difficulty is that the same party that we have the pecuniary interest with, Circle P Paving, also bid on the other portion of the contract. They were the second high bidder, so it's really not appropriate because we could theoretically vote against the staff's recommendation. And then,
all right. Okay.
So from that perspective, it's probably prudent just to maintain the pecuniary interest with respect to the whole report. Okay, so if there's nothing, no other reports that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda item, I'll ask for a motion to move the remaining consent agenda items. Councillor Butler, are there any questions with respect to those items that are in the consent agenda package? I had a couple of questions, and Mr. Walsh, you may not know offhand, but I'm interested in knowing how many trees are included in the contract with respect to IS 12-2017. There's quite a lengthy list, and I don't think it starts at number one and then continues on, but it looks like a fair number of trees that are being included in that. It looks like it's covering all of Crescent Park that hasn't already been dealt with from the looks of the locations.
Mr. Mayor, you're correct on the latter. It is covering what remains of the tree removals in Crescent Park. I don't have the exact number, but 90 rings a bell.
Okay. And then if I might, Mr. Brady, maybe you could answer this. This has to do with, or maybe not, maybe it's Mr. Walsh again, IS 13, which is the request to extend the agreement for the food concessions at Bay Beach. Can you refresh my memory, if it is you, Mr. Walsh, where the on-street vendors will be located once we move forward with the changes? That's Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. I appreciate that. The on-street... There will be two recessed bays, if you will, on Erie Avenue. One will be used for a drop-off zone and for people wanting to drop off people. And then further along, there will be another little zone area, which is sort of an indent off of Erie, which will be there for food vendors, should we so desire to have food vendors in that location. But the current design is to have a bay area for food vendors.
So that's an issue that has not yet been finally determined yet.
Whether or not the second bay is used for food vendors has not been determined, but we felt it would be reasonable to make sure that we had a space for them, so if council so chose.
I think that's prudent. There's still some discussion in the community about whether that's appropriate or not. We're currently getting about $7,500 per year from the concessionaire. And if we were to go to food vending trucks, any idea what the approximate return might be, or is that something that the clerk could get back to us on?
I don't have an estimate as to what it could be, but certainly it would be in the range of the $7,500, if not greater.
Does anyone else have any questions? No? I'm going to call the question with respect to the consent agenda. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Councillor Lubbers, can I hand the chair to you with respect to IS 14 then, please?
Yes, could I have a mover for IS 14-2017 Road Resurfacing Tender Award?
So moved.
Moved by Councilor McDermott. Just one question for the clerk. I'm not quite sure how we're going to work on this, and I'm not sure how our rules of procedure stands, but with two people left to vote, are we allowed to do that?
Ryu and to you, yes, as long as there's a minimum of two, when there's conflict of interest at play, that is all you need.
Okay, thank you very much. Councilor McDermott, do you have any questions regarding the award of tender? And I have no questions either, so I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. I'll hand the chair back to Mayor Redekop. That was difficult.
That
don't do that.
I had grave concerns, I'll tell you. But it looks like you worked it out nicely. Well done, Councillor Lubberts. That takes us then to Planning and Development Services, and Councillor Butler, I hand the chair back to you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now opened. We are going to report number PDS-27-2017, the proposed zoning bylaw amendment 3303 Dominion Road, Alan Haywood agent, Roy Berry owner, Marcello Petrella, and Frank Renda applicants. Can I have a mover for that report?
So
Councillor McDermott? That report is on the floor. Are there any questions? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Not so much questions. I'd like to defer this until we hear more from our legal department, and maybe give the other parties an opportunity for their lawyers to speak. I'm very confused as to why we're even here. I didn't know that somebody that didn't own a property could apply for severance on a piece of property they didn't own. I would assume that you would purchase the property and then apply for your severance. I understand some of the comments from Mr. Brady that Mr. Berry agrees to go ahead with everything that that is proposed here, but speaking to Mr. Haywood and speaking to the other parties that have a purchase and sale agreement, it appears that Mr. Berry agreed to everything. He agreed to sell it to Mr. Haywood, and he says that they spoke in July of 2016, and then January 20th, he enters into another purchase and sale agreement. And I would have a tendency to want to back away from this for now. I don't want to get the town of Fort Erie in the middle of a third-party lawsuit because we agree to do something like this. I don't know the rules, regulations, and that, but I would prefer to defer this until we hear more from Mr. Lusdick.
Thank you, Councillor Lubert. Before we do that, I think Mr. Brady wanted to make a comment.
Yes, thank you. This particular application was fast-tracked because we're trying to move development along. So that's why this evening you have both the public meeting and you also have the recommendation report. If there is a controversy in the item, then we don't do this at all. Then what we have is you have a information report before you this evening, and then later on there's a recommendation report. So one thing that council may wish to direct staff to do is that they may consider what Mr. Kernahan has given us this evening as an information report and accept it for information and ask staff to bring a further recommendation report in the future and to include a discussion with our legal branch.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. And Councillor Nutt, you had a comment or question?
Yes, I did. I actually was just going to cite what Mr. Brady did and ask that if we could accept this as an information report and direct staff to come back with a legal opinion on it. I am puzzled. I understand that the proponents want to move along the development, and those opposed to it obviously have a contractual interest in Part 1 and Part 2. That's where the confusion's coming in, because the property's not severed yet. So just looking at the facts on what was presented in the way of physical evidence, a contract, and if we take Mr. Hayward at his word without presenting the purchase contract from last June, in contract law in Ontario, it's pretty basic that as long as the contract from June is still valid, that would be the standing contract. But I don't want to get into that without hearing from Mr. Lustig. So if Councillor Lubertz is willing to accept it for information purposes, then we can ask staff to get a legal opinion on this.
Councillor Lubertz, would you like to pursue the deferment, or would you like to accept it for information purposes?
I don't have a problem accepting it for information, as long as we get reassurance from staff. Nothing's moving forward on this here until we hear back, because, I mean, I understand, you know, somebody sends an email at the last minute, but I don't want to move forward unless we're making sure that the town of Fort Erie is not putting themselves in jeopardy. And two people have purchase and sale agreements. As far as I'm concerned, both purchase and sale agreements are as bona fide as each other in my eyes right now. I don't have enough information. We don't have enough information to move forward with this. So if we receive it for information, that's fine. But would that require an amendment?
So I believe that there would have to be an amended motion, yes. So would you like to do that, or would you like to do that?
I'd like to propose a friendly amendment to Councillor Lubert.
Well, you'd have to make the amendment itself. Councillor Nutt? I was preferring you make the amendment, Councillor Nutt.
Okay, then I'll make the amendment that we accept the report for information purposes and ask staff to consult our legislative department for an opinion.
That amendment is on the floor. Are there any comments or questions to that, Councillor Lubertz?
Yes, just the clarification from Mr. Brady that nothing is moving forward on this until we hear back.
Mr. Brady?
Should Council approve this report for information purposes, staff will take the direction that a further report will come to Council as a recommendation report, and in association with that report, there will be discussion with our legal services.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Councillor Lubert?
But there will be no movements and work by our staff to continue on with the severance and the rezoning until such time as we get
it. Mr. Brady?
That's all I'm looking for.
The rezoning will not move forward.
Okay, thank you.
And that amendment is on the floor. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll raise the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. So now we're going to go back to the main motion as amended. All those in favor?
Just before we go to the main motion as amended, can we get the clerk to read it out? Because I think that was our agreement that we would make sure that the listening audience would hear the amended motions or whatever.
Sure. Madam Clerk?
For you, Chair, the motion essentially will be that the recommendation regarding approval of report PDS 27-2017 be amended to be received for information only, to allow further information to be provided after consultation with the town solicitor.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. Thank you. That moves us to report number PDS 29-17. Thank you, Councillor McDermott, that Council approves the allocation of $10,000 to match that of the Bridgeburg Station Downtown Business Improvement Area Board of Management for the purposes of the preparation of a conceptual streetscape plan to guide improvements to the Downtown Business District. It's the Bridgeburg BIA streetscape plan. That motion is on the, or that report is on the floor. Any comments or questions, Your Worship?
I did, Madam Chair. I very much support this, and I think this is wonderful news, and I think the business people on Jarvis Street should be very pleased that we're partnering with them on this. It's part of our role in assisting and facilitating the revitalization of that area of the town. I did have a question with respect to the letter that was sent to the town by the BIA, and it's on page 4 of the report package. It's item 5, removal of existing angled parking spots and added parallel parking. Not exactly sure what to make of that.
Mr. Brady?
The letter that came in from the BIA is an overall guide to what they believe that they want at the present time. It's not subject to the review that we will be doing as a part of this study. So whether or not the angled parking is something that could or should be removed is something that we'll take a look at as a part of this overall study. It would appear that what the BIA is thinking about, at least in my discussions with them, is that they find that angled parking to be a bit awkward and that it creates some difficulties for their customers. I've explained to them that if they remove the angled parking and they put it in more traditional parking along the edge of the road, that they will end up with much less parking spaces. And so we'll be looking at both facets of that question as we move ahead.
I note that they're also looking, though, to have some parking lots that would be available for customers, but yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not a business person, and I'm quite happy to try to work with them and accommodate whatever we can for them. So I'm going to support this, obviously, but that was just something I was curious about.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Nutt?
Just a follow-up question on the mayor's point on the angled parking. Mr. Brady, off the top of your head, and maybe this is a bit of an unfair question, but if the angled parking was removed and parallel parking would be installed, how much percentage of the parking space available would be reduced? So how many spots would we actually lose? 2/3, I would say.
Mr. Brady?
My estimate would be just under 2/3. It depends on how you lay it out.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Any other comments or questions? Councillor McDermott?
Yes, I'm of course going to support this evening. I know that the Business Association has done a wonderful job up to now, and this is going to be kind of guidelines on where we go into the future. Of course, things can change so quickly around there, and happily so. So this plan, you know, although it's going to be kind of a guidelines to go by, it could change at the very last minute as well. So, and we're hoping that that's the case. So, and the BIA has put up $10,000 to match. So, you know, they're serious about it. And I'm just looking forward to the next couple of years of growth as well, and hopefully we'll be able to put this plan into action.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. No other comments or questions? Then I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. That brings us to report PDS 30-2017, Brownfields Program Application, Willow Trail, 3610 Hibbert Street. Can I have a mover? Councillor Luberts? That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? None? I'll call the question. All those in favor? That report and that motion is carried. That moves us to report number PDS-31-2017, endorsement of Town of Fort Erie Waterfront Strategy.
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Knight.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to put forward an amendment for this motion. Is the fourth that, and that council established the waterfront acquisition bank and provides it with an annual minimum contribution of $500,000 as outlined in the waterfront strategy, with the starting with the 2018 budget and further. I'd like to change that paragraph, and I would like it to state, instead of stating, let me just see my note here. Okay, so that the annual minimum recommended contribution is $500,000, and at that time will be considered, instead of starting. So strike out starting with the 2018 budget. We would say considered with the 2018 budget, to be considered part as part of the 2018 budget, so it can be deliberated at budget time. I think that's appropriate.
Okay, so I just want to...
Madam Chair, can I just take a stab at that?
Sure.
I would suggest that it simply state that if this is what Councillor Nutt has in mind, Council establishes a waterfront acquisition bank and refers the annual contributions to be made to the 2018 budget process. That way, matter will be deferred. We've been given some indication by staff what they think would be an appropriate amount. And I'd be looking for advice from staff as well as to where that money might be sourced other than the levy. So perhaps some of the money that comes from the slots, or perhaps a portion of a surplus from a previous year, or I think all of the lands that are sold, perhaps. This makes reference to related. So I would suggest that we simply refer the amount to 2018.
That's more concise, yes. Got right to it, yeah.
Madam Clerk, did you get that?
Yes, I believe so. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So this report has been amended, and that is on the floor right now. Can we hear the amendment, please, Madam Clerk?
To you, Chair, as I understand it, the amendment would be that report, PDS 312017, sorry, that the recommendation of said report be amended by changing the fourth directive to that council establishes a waterfront acquisition bank and refers the annual contributions to be made to the 2018 budget process.
You're pleased with that then? Thank you, Madam Clerk. That report then, as amended, is on the floor. Any comments or questions to the amendment? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Clerk. I'm just a little confused as to what we're doing here with the amendment. We're going to, in the report, is asking that we establish an acquisition bank. So we are going to establish the acquisition bank, and then we're just going to consider during the 2018 budget as to how much we'll put into that bank. And then we'll provide the source of funding, whichever, yeah. Okay, all right. That's fine with me then, yeah.
Any other comments or questions? I'll call the question on the report as amended. On the amendment, all those in favor? That is passed. And now the report as amended. Any comments or questions to the report as amended, Your Worship?
Yes, I fully support this report and the strategy that's put forth. I recognize the significant amount of work put into it by the consultants. the significant number of individuals who participated in the process, either as part of the community focus group or as individuals who spoke to the consultants or who attended the public meetings. This provides us with a long-term blueprint for what we can do to capture what I think is really the most significant asset of our community, and that is the waterfront. And just dealing with the acquisition bank, in my mind, and based on the report, it doesn't have to be beach. Beach is wonderful, and we've got lots of beach. But it doesn't have to be beach. It can be natural heritage features. It can be habitat for wildlife or fish. And I would hope that as we move forward, we don't lose sight of that. There are some very good suggestions as how we can proceed. I wouldn't say that I agree entirely with all of the procedures, all of the recommendations, but in principle, by and large, I agree with the vast majority of this. And it's something that was acquiring waterfront was something that started 15, 16, 17 years ago when I was the mayor before. Not only did we acquire the Revstock property, which was something that we paid a significant sum of money for and the community was fully supportive of, we also happened to acquire a significant portion of waterfront that had acceded to the Crown down in the Burley, Bernard area, and that was for free. We simply made an application and we got that. Not a lot of beach there. There's some rock, but it is a wildlife habitat, and it's very important, and it's emblematic of the mix that we have in terms of our waterfront. So this is a vision, and it provides us with the framework to work with property owners. I'm a large supporter of working with property owners to try to accommodate a variety of interests. And I hope that as we go forward, this is something that the municipality will do, that it will look to property owners associations and try to work with them. We'll recognize the rights of individuals who live along the waterfront. And I hope that those property owners will recognize the significance and the importance of the waterfront to our community and the people that live here. So I know that there's a lot of goodwill in Fort Erie. We've all seen that. It's a significant difference to, I think, the attitude in the community among various peoples from 50 or 60 years ago, where there was a lot of antagonism, a lot of tension, and a lot of uncertainty about what was intended. I think this provides us with a clear document. Everybody can read it. Everybody should know what it is that we're interested in doing and what we want to accomplish. And I think that we need to be open and transparent as we move forward. We will have great success with this strategy because we are, as a council, I'm confident, committed to making sure that it works. We have to, as the report indicates, be dedicated to the objectives and the ideals that are set out in here. And it will cost money, and it will take time, and it will take commitment. But I think that we have a great opportunity here, and perhaps the greatest opportunity this municipality has ever had to develop an integrated waterfront strategy that will fully take advantage of the opportunity that it presents to us as a community. And I believe that it will be one of the main items that will allow this community to be unique as we move forward. So I'm fully supportive. If anybody didn't get that impression, I'll repeat it. I'm fully supportive. I am hoping that this will pass and that we'll be able to move forward with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to draw attention on behalf of Councillor Zanko to page 6 of 6. She asked me on behalf of herself and some constituents, because she was going to be here tonight, to have staff explain again the objection that some of the residents had in her ward in regards to the process regarding renovations and minor variants. Maybe Mr. Brady could give a comment on that it's not going to affect the current process as it stands.
Mr. Brady?
One of the ways that the waterfront strategy is identifying that significant waterfront can be put into the public realm is to use the development process. So as individuals along the waterfront want to redevelop their properties in certain fashions, the Planning Act provides mechanisms by which we can ask for the waterfront to become public. We have that, some of that in our official plan today, and we utilize it from time to time, and we certainly have it in some of our policies. What the waterfront strategy is asking us to do is to go further, and it's asking us to consider when minor variances are being dealt with along the waterfront, to consider that as another opportunity to take properties. There's been some pushback from some of the owners in the area, concerned that they wouldn't be able to add to their cottages or add to their homes. And I've given them assurances that as long as what the that they're doing doesn't require a Planning Act approval in any way, that there's certainly nothing within the strategy that's being proposed that would create them any difficulty. I think the crux of the matter is whether or not this council wants to have a policy framework which provides staff with direction that when minor variances are being considered, that whether we should pursue taking waterfront at that point in time. There's pros and cons to that question. One of the that's before you this evening is that town staff will bring forth an official plan amendment to implement a number of the matters. That official plan amendment will be brought forward in the near future, and it will outline what we believe are mechanisms to do so. At that point in time, that we'll go through another full public process, and the issue of whether minor variances is something that should be pursued by staff or should not be pursued by staff will be able to be dealt with, and direction will be given. So I can't, Councillor, not give you a full answer to that question this evening. I can say that the issue that seems to have caused a bit of a rub is the minor variance issue, and that will be before you again.
Through you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Brady. Councillor Zenko just wanted again to reinforce the position of the constituents in her ward as their representative, that and it's good to know that there will be a secondary public process that they can come out to voice concerns in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'm just going to echo the thoughts of the Mayor. I, too, am fully supportive of the report, and I understand there's a lot of things in the whole strategy that are going to be one step at a time, and some of them might be tweaked as we go along, but just a comment on the Waterfront Acquisition Bank and my thoughts on the fact that we're going to hopefully commit ourselves to putting some monies aside for acquisition of waterfront properties. And having gone through the whole process and followed it closely with Bay Beach and the Redstock properties and things, over the period of time since we purchased that property, there has been other waterfront properties that have come up for sale. And not having the funds in place to purchase those properties, we missed a lot of great opportunities to purchase great waterfront properties and maybe sever off the beaches and then sell the homes. This will put us in a position where the money will be there, and if there's other projects that come up from time to time that council and future councils feel are more important, we still won't be losing those opportunities to purchase waterfront property. And the perfect example is if if we didn't have the money in place and a purchase in a property came up, if there was something that council felt was more important, we'd have to pass on the waterfront and move forward with the higher priority. This waterfront acquisition bank will hopefully eliminate that problem and still allow us to pursue waterfront as well as moving forward with higher priority items. So I'm glad to see that we're going to establish the waterfront acquisition bank, and now it's just a matter of how much we can put in there over time, and hopefully everything will work out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor Lubert. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, then I'll ask the question. All those in favor? Carried. I'll return the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councilor Butler. That takes us to infrastructure services, and that would be Councilor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure services is now in session. We have no presentations or delegations, and our first report is IS-05-2017, contracted conventional public transit service for the town of Fort Erie extension agreement. Do I have a mover?
I'll move that.
Mayor Redekop, any comments or questions? Mayor Redekop.
Chair, I had circulated a memo making reference to a couple of meetings last week, one with the new transit advisory committee, which had requested an opportunity to further consider, I guess, what will be coming up in the next report, but they're in tandem, the two transit reports. And so I'm subject to what any other councillors might have. I'd like to move that we defer this, and I believe it's for 1 month, to May the 15th. Am I postponing it or am I postponing it? Go away for 8 years and they change all the terminology. It takes you years to figure it out still. So I won't move that if there are other councillors that wish to speak, but when they're finished speaking, then I'd like to move that.
Okay, any other councillors, any comments or questions? Mayor Redekop, right back to you.
And I move that we postpone deliberation on this report to May the 15th, after we've received comment from the Transit Advisory Committee, and our staff has had an opportunity to discuss some of the issues raised at a meeting last week with the consultant, with the service provider.
Okay, that motion is on the floor. Any comments or questions regarding timing? Seeing none, I'll ask the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That moves us to IS-06-2017, adoption of the transit route, bus stop, and facilities improvement plan, phase 3. Have a mover? Councillor Nutt, any comments or questions? Mayor Redekop.
For the same reasons as the last report, I would move that we postpone deliberation on this report to May the 15th.
And I don't think we have any reason to hold off. Any comments or questions on the timing? Seeing none, all those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That brings us to new business and inquiries. Any new business? Councilor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Lubberts. I have a question for Mr. Walsh. There's a bump out on West Main Street on the corner of May Ave and West Main Street. I know I've made this inquiry earlier in the term, but I'm bringing it up again as several residents contacted me in regards to the reflector that was knocked down during the snow plowing, and it just brought to mind some questions that I'd like to get some more information on it. My first question being, who requested the bump outs, as they're not embraced by the residents or the businesses in this area?
Mr. Wolf?
I'll have to look into that and get back to you, Councillor, through you, Mr. Chair, sorry. the reconstruction of West Main predates my tenure at the town.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Walsh. I'll hold off my other questions till he brings that information forward.
Okay, all right. Any other comments, Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh, I have a couple of inquiries that I'd like to ask of you. First of all, and I apologize, I should have put this in an email to you, but the Ridgeway crosswalk has been approved, and just wondering, what would the timeline be to have that in? Because apparently over the weekend there were some disgruntled visitors and tourists that were down in the core, and cars were not allowing them to cross.
Through you, Mr. Chair, with respect to the timing of the painting, it will be shortly. The contract for our line painting has been let awarded, and we've had a meeting with the contractor. With respect to letting them cross, the pedestrians do not have the right of way at this crossing. It is the cars that have the right of way, so I would express caution for all pedestrians. Look both ways before you cross the road.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. My next question is that some residents would like to know when ditching will start again in the Thunder Bay area.
Again, through you, Mr. Chair. We have quite a large number of CRMs, customer relation management, tickets outstanding on Thunder Bay drainage. We have coalesced all the CRMs into sort of one master CRM, and we'll be issuing a small contract for ditching within Thunder Bay so that we can attack these all at once. That's planned to be done this spring, summer.
Thank you. And then my last question is with respect to Bernard Beach, and I know that we've been back and forth over the last couple of years regarding the pipe itself. And I sent you a couple of pictures a few weeks ago now, and I just wondered, have you had an opportunity to take a look and make any recommendations?
Through you, Mr. Chair, with respect to the pipe, we have to install a head wall on the end of the pipe with a grating on it. And then part of our work this spring, early summer, will be restoring the sand so that the pipe is covered again.
And if I may, just one further question to that. Could you just explain to the general public what the cost would be involved to do anything further to that piping and laying it further into the lake?
Through you, Mr. Chair. We don't have exact figures. It's ballpark estimates, but to extend the pipe, the outfall from the stormwater retention structure underground out into the lake would be in the millions of dollars, if it's possible at all through the approval process. There's federal and provincial approvals that would be required. We'd have to undergo a significant environmental assessment to assure ourselves that that was the right course of action, and then the cost of tunneling itself. The pipe would have to be extended because it's a very shallow beach there, and we'd have to protect the pipe from ice damage over the winter.
Thank you.
Councillor Nutt.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up on one point that Councillor Butler had brought forward, which is the ditching, which at a previous meeting I had requested that with we use the remaining winter control budgets to perform ditching. I've formulated a list of ditches through you to Mr. Walsh, I guess. The residents are contacting me directly about the ditching. Mr. Walsh, can I pass that ditch along, or the ditching list along to you?
Through you, Mr. Chair, you can pass that list along, and what we'll do is put it into a CRM and address them in the appropriate order.
Mayor Redekop?
Thank you, Councillor Lubbers. I just want to go back to Councillor Nutt's last inquiry. And I think what I heard was that we're contemplating using winter control surplus funds to do ditching.
Mr. Chair. That's Councillor Nutt's suggestion. That's not been a direction of council. I'd prefer not to spend that money right now. We have no idea what the next winter will bring. And although we're in a good position financially with our winter control budget, we don't know the answer. We do have funding set aside to attack our ditches right now.
Yes, I think our CAO would like to comment. Mr. Coca?
Yes, through you, Chair, to the Councillor. I think what the Councillor is suggesting is through our winter maintenance, we guarantee contractors 100 hours of winter maintenance. And when we don't use those hours, we get those contractors to do additional work for us, be it ditching, grading of roads, and so forth. So I think what the Councillor is suggesting is that we use some of those allocated or those free hours to do some ditching.
That's presuming that the contractor has the type of equipment that can do ditching.
Through you, Chair, that is correct. And a lot of the contractors that we do utilize do have equipment to do ditching.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I think that makes
sense. Yeah, I apologize to Mr. Walsh. I didn't mean the winter control budget. I meant the allocated hours that were left over from the winter from non-plowing for the fact that we didn't have a heavy snowfall.
Thank you. Well, I feel better now.
Okay, so we're still
second.
So we're still saving money.
Yes, Mr. Jansen. This is prudent, yes.
We're still saving money. We're not spending your money here.
Director of Finance is happy, so we're all happy. If I might, the second question that I had was a follow-up with respect to the Thunder Bay Beach and the pipe and the drainage and the whole bit. And have we contemplated some underground storage or any other ways that we can minimize the flow of that water? Because it's the flow of the water that's now been, and before your time, Mr. Waltz, but the flow of stormwater that's been directed to that particular beach and the velocity with which it goes just blows that whole system out to the lake and all the sand with it whenever we have a large rain. So we've been discussing this for 2 years anyways, I think probably since we first were elected because it was an issue then. And we had, I think, talked about some possible solutions, one of which was even acquiring a parcel of land to build a pond, a retention pond. Do you have any, I wonder if Mr. Walsh has any comments on that he wants to make public.
Mr. Walsh?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Chair. We did make modifications to the storage structure 2 summers ago, and since then, in my opinion, it's been acting significantly better than it was. We did two things. We rearranged the storage mechanism underground, and we constructed a new pipe further down the beach. We do not get the blowouts of sand that we used to get that were from the top of the beach downwards. Any water that overflows the emergency spillway spills out the new pipe, and it's located, its outfall is located about halfway down the beach. And that sand tends to repair itself very fast just through normal wave action. In the report, we brought forward, right at the beginning of this terms of council, with respect to the peer review, there were other options listed in that report, and I believe I've delivered that report through email to all of council again. There are a number of things we can do, but none of them are cheap. So that I think concludes my commentary on that right now.
I guess the context is that here we've just adopted a waterfront strategy. We're talking about putting money into a waterfront acquisition fund. We're talking about taking advantage of opportunities to develop specific high-profile areas along the waterfront. And we've got a beach, which is actually a very busy beach. I guess maybe it's not as well used as it used to be because more people have their own pools. But this was a prime beach in Fort Erie. Everybody knew about it. Lots of people utilized it. And it has been diminished as a result of public works that were necessary. I understand the need to direct the water, the storm water, someplace. And maybe at the time it seemed like a good idea, but you know, here we are, we're faced with that. And I know it's going to cost money. Mr. Chair, when you talk about, you know, one priority bumping another, well, is it more important to maintain and enhance what you have or acquire more? And those are the kinds of setoffs that we will be faced with all along. So it's a continuing, thorn that keeps rubbing us, and at some point we're going to have to try to address it, I think. Well,
thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Any other inquiries? I'd just like to make a couple comments on some of the things that were brought up. Councilor Butler was asking about the crosswalk in Ridgeway, and Mr. Walsh, I'm just wondering, is there a possibility, and you said that pedestrians don't have the right of way, but can we put some kind of a caution to motorists that there's a public crosswalk, pedestrian crosswalk or something, just to give them the idea that be careful, calm down, and then maybe some of the people will be courteous enough to stop and allow the pedestrians to cross. I'm just wondering, painting the road is one thing, but letting it know that this is our main pedestrian crosswalk. Is there something we could do?
Mr. Chair, through this request, we have installed pedestrian warning signs. So they're visible northbound and southbound, warning that pedestrians may be present in the short travel distance. There are other options, up to including a full traffic signal, but as we go further down that road, everything costs money, obviously.
Okay, thank you very much. And then my other one was in regards to Thunder Bay Beach or Bernard Beach. And again, we're talking about, and I'm listening to some of the ideas that have been floating around, and I remember when that all started, and the engineers that were there, they informed the town of Fort Erie that there was too much clay in the soil and that the system wasn't going to work according to the way they had planned if there was more sand and less clay. And so here we have a beach that is constantly being eroded, and I understand, you know, some of the wave actions will come back, but it doesn't happen overnight. And even when the sand is back, the beach is constantly wet. And yes, the sand is there, but you might as well not have the sand because you can't use it. And I'm thinking that maybe we need to start looking at alternatives away from the beach to take the water and divert the water somewhere else. And I know we did discuss this a few months back about acquiring a piece of property on Thunder Bay Road and doing something with that so that we could divert the water elsewhere. Maybe an easement on someone's property might work. I don't know what will work, but I don't know that there's only one answer, and that answer is on that property. I think what we need to do is we need to look at maybe three or four different outlets for Thunder Bay. I'm being told on a constant basis that Thunder Bay is very flat. We have a very low grade on Thunder Bay Road that carries the water. So if there's a small grade, then I don't think that it matters where we outlet the water to the lake. It'll get to the lake. And I'm thinking that maybe we should start looking somewhere else other than Bernard Beach to outlet the water. You have any comments on that, Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Chair, Although I'm very empathetic to the users of the beach, I think as Councillor, or sorry, Mayor Redekop points out, the greater good here was the resolution of flooding issues upstream, which this outfall structure and the associated pipes have addressed fantastically, if that's a word. And until I get some firm direction from council through budgets to start an engineering study, we're not quite prepared to do anything right now.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Walsh. And I understand that, you know, there was a flooding issue in Thunder Bay. People were complaining we needed to do something. But we were also told when that system went in that once it was in place and functional, we wouldn't even know it was there. And we know it's there every single day. I could see that maybe from time to time we would know it's there, but it's constant. So yes, you alleviated the flooding maybe, but they didn't fulfill their promise as far as not knowing that it's even there. So we do definitely have a problem with it, and if it takes a motion, maybe someone or myself will work on some kind of a motion to start things for Thunder Bay. Thank you. Any other, Mayor Redekop?
Well, it seems to me that we've somewhat been around this horn, and I think we're talking several million dollars to redirect this. I mean, I would have thought that the original plan would have had this water draining to 6 Mile Creek, or at least the bulk of it. I don't know what the elevations are in that area, and I don't know what the costs would have been at that time. But if I might, Mr. Chair, we're not directing any more water as we're doing more drainage work in Thunder Bay. We're not directing any more water to this particular drain, are we?
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Chair. No, the Thunder Bay drainage works, phases 1 through 4, are now complete. The last set of sewers was installed last fall.
So the problem that we have is the problem will persist unless there's an intervention. Is that a fair statement?
For you, Mr. Chair, yes, that's fair.
So we have received, I mean, we've been raising this issue now for several months, and we've had a variety of responses to questions. I wonder if it wouldn't be appropriate to have Mr. Walsh's assistant just put together whatever information has been provided to council with respect to this so that we can take a look at it, see what solutions have been suggested, see what cost may be attached to that, and then maybe we can somebody can raise this at the next regular council meeting, and if we want to direct staff to do something, we can bring forward a notice of motion to have staff do something to further a potential solution to the problem. That, I don't want to create a lot of work for Mr. Walsh, but it seems to me that for us to start.
Mr. Walsh, you kind of comment on that?
We can do that. It will essentially be a redistribution of report IS-0520.
Well,
I start 15.
Whatever, we won't hold you to it. Whatever the report was, but there's been some, I think, communication as well, maybe some memos with respect to this, and certainly we did have the peer review that was done by Parsons.
Correct.
Maybe that could be recirculated as well. In case we have spare time that we're not reading 500 pages worth of agendas, but I think that would be helpful because then we can see where we are, we can see what's been said, and we're going to have to deal with this. I think in all sincerity, particularly in view of our waterfront strategy, how do we allow this to continue if we don't?
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question with respect to an engineering report. If we were to hire an engineer to to do another consultation report, what would the cost be and would it be relevant?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't have a cost right now. I'd have to determine a brief scope of work. It could be $20,000. It could be $200,000.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Walsh, just to go back on the reports, again, when we received the reports, and I remember some of them in particular, it constantly refers to what we have, and then it gives us some suggestions on how we can ease the problem with what we have, and none of them seem to be working. For instance, the last time that we had something, it was we were going to put some orifices and change the orifices in there so that the water dissipated slower when it got going down onto the beach. And Mayor Redekop made a comment just a while ago about there's not more water going to Bernard Beach, and which I understand. But the problem that we're having is the water is getting there faster, and Bernard Beach can't handle the volume. That's where the problem is. We don't have more water. We just have a higher volume in a shorter period of time. And that's where the problem is. And that's why I'm thinking if we have, you know, whatever it is, 150 liters a minute, if we distribute it out to three different outlets, now we only have 50 liters a minute going through each system. So now it alleviates on each piece, and maybe less volume going through Bernard Beach would alleviate the washing through, and it would allow the beach to dry up. So if that's what I would be looking for, if we were going to get a report on other solutions outside of Bernard Beach, because I don't know that the answer is on that piece of property. Any other inquiries? That brings us to the business status report. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lubritz. That takes us to Corporate and Community Services, and that's Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now open. We have no presentations and delegations tonight. Under reports, we have CDS 092017, proposed volunteer program. Can I get a mover for the report? Thank you, Councillor McDermott. That report is on the floor for comment or discussion. Worship?
Just had a couple of questions. I'm going to support this report. It's not everything that I would have hoped that it would be, but it's moving in the right direction, I believe. The questions I had related to paragraph 7 of the volunteer program policy, and it's on page 7 of the report package. It talks about insurance and says that an organization and a volunteer are not covered by the town's insurance for any damage to personal or private property or injury caused or sustained by the organization or a volunteer. So this will be clearly the organization's responsibility to provide insurance coverage. Is that correct?
Either, if you could approach.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Chairman. That is the intent, yes, that the organization would be responsible for indemnifying its individual members.
So we have an organization, we have volunteers, we have a community project that's benefiting the community, and we can't provide any insurance coverage whatsoever.
No, that's not entirely correct. If we have a council-appointed board or committee, of which there are many, the members who are appointed to the board or committee and persons who volunteer for that council-appointed board or committee are considered insured persons under the town's corporate insurance policy. If you are not a member of a council-appointed board or committee, you are not an insured person under the town's insurance policy.
Right. I gather that. So if I might, Mr. Chair, so if we had years ago, I think we had some volunteers put a roof on the clubhouse at Lions Park in Ridgeway. So they would have to do that. As I understand this scheme, volunteers would have to be part of an organized group. That organized group would have to provide the insurance coverage, and the municipality would simply provide approval for them to work on the roof and make sure that there were certain safety precautions that have been taken.
That's correct.
Well, as I said, this isn't everything that I'd hoped for, but at least it's a step in the right direction, and maybe, who knows, maybe someday we'll find other ways that we can expand this. But I appreciate the work that you've done on this, Mr. Mather. I know that it's been a long-standing issue, and I think you've struck a good balance. So,
thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you.
Any other councillors have any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, I just have one for you, Mr. Mather, question. What aspects of the volunteer program would you apply to groups looking to organize an Earth Day or other type of cleanup on town property? Because the stipulations made under 10.0 screening seem somewhat onerous for casual type situations like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to you. The recommendation with respect to screening and insurance is a recommendation of our insurer, taking into account that as the owner of the property, the town has certain legal responsibilities. So it would be something that, I mean, Earth Day, for example, is something that you know happens regularly every year at an appointed time. So you could plan for something like that. The recommendation in the program policy is 4 weeks. So that particular group, whether it's the Kinsmen or a neighborhood group or what have you, they could choose to bring forward a proposal to the town, describing the type of project that they have in mind for the town property. And then if it's approved, they would have to be able to show that that group is insured.
Okay, that's the proposal in this report. It would be for moving forward, considering Earth Day is this Saturday, and I know some community groups, such in Ridgeway and Bridgeburg, will be out. Just residents come out to clean, and
well, it depends who's it's sponsored by. Now, you said, you know, Bridgeburg and Ridgeway. If it's being organized and managed by a council-appointed board or committee, those persons who volunteer for the council-appointed board or committee would be considered insured persons.
What about the volunteers that they enlist that show up that day to clean garbage?
They would be considered insured persons if the organization that's running that particular project is a council-appointed board or committee.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Nutt.
I'll take it.
Chair Nutt. Mr. Mather,
I'll keep my eye on him, I guess.
You say this is the policy of our insurer, and is that something that's with every insurer? And the reason I ask this question is just my personal homeowner's insurance. I can go to my provider and ask for riders for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And one is if you're going to have a wedding or a stag or go or something for your, mm-hmm. and you're going to have a liquor license, you can put a rider on your insurance. Do they not provide us with the ability to have a rider for special events, especially Earth Day? I mean, Earth Day is nationwide. And now we're telling volunteers, well, unless you want to go out and get yourself $2 million liability insurance, we can't allow you to participate in Earth Day.
The alternative, through you, Mr. Chairman, to Councilor Luberts, the alternative is to amend our policy such that we consider volunteers to be insured persons, which is the mechanism by which other municipalities have achieved, I believe, the ends that you are seeking.
Yes, but from what I'm hearing, that they have to be town-appointed boards or committees, right?
The way the policy is currently written, that is correct. The scenario that I believe you're describing is to allow sort of anyone come forward to volunteer. The insurer does not provide riders for that situation. However, what they would provide is they would provide blanket insurance to anyone who wishes to volunteer on town property on a project, but we would have to amend our policy accordingly.
But if we amend our policy, our insurance policy would be amended for the whole year, not just for that event. See, what I'm getting at is we just give you like a rider for $25 or $50 mm-hmm. for the day, right? Or for each group for the day, but then we're not paying thousands of dollars for a year and not using it other than for 2 or 3 days a year. And to me, it doesn't make sense.
For you, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how the insurance is priced and whether it can be attained for a 2 or 3 day event. The information that was asked of and provided by the insurer was that they are not in the business of providing those types of riders on the town policy.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Your Worship.
If there's no other questions, I wonder if between now and next Monday we could find out what the premium would be if we were to request of the insurance company that volunteers for municipally sanctioned activities are identified as insured persons.
Okay. I could do that through you, Mr. Chairman, certainly.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments for Mr. Mather? Thank you, Mr. Mather. Very well done on the report. Calling the question on CS09-2017. All those in favor? None opposed. That carries. Moving on to FES01-2017, amendments to the Town of Fort Erie Emergency Management Plan and Management Program and Emergency Plan.
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. It's my understanding we have the author of the report. If you could please come to the podium, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lee Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions or comments regarding the report for Mr. Smith? Your Worship?
Yeah, I'd like to compliment Mr. Smith for putting together a very, very good report. I see that there's a lot of emphasis on coordination, communications and coordination, and so you've obviously got our new communications coordinator in mind when all of this was done, but this really outlines A to Z, nuts to bolts approach to how you handle an emergency situation. I happen to have had, I wouldn't say the pleasure, but in October of 2006, I was the mayor when we declared a state of emergency in Fort Erie, and I've seen firsthand how this type of situation operates and how fundamentally important this is for a community. I'm not sure if you had identified some of the hazards that that are referred to in this report, and if you did, I've got some questions on that, and I'm thinking specifically of page 33, which of the packet of the total report. So it would be, find it. In terms of the actual under the crisis and emergency communication section, the hazard, yes, hazardous identification and risk assessment. Is that your handiwork?
Yes, that was not my document, Your Worship.
Page 33 of the package, total package. No, it says 33 of 200 and whatever. I'm sorry.
Your Worship, this was something that the region put together initially and then assisted each of the municipalities with to create their, and the HIRA is actually the hazard index and risk assessment for the municipality, so that you can come up with your top 10 type of hazards that may be facing the municipality, and then you can gear your training programs and your exercises towards it. That is actually considered confidential, so it was not included in the council package, although if any of the councillors or Your Worship would like to see that, you're welcome to do so through the fire department or through the CAO's office.
Well, I raise it because some of the hazards that are identified, as an example, it does say tornado unlikely, and I would agree with that. But it does say extreme weather likely, but consequence slight. Anybody that was here in 2006 or in 1977 would think that extreme weather can be extremely catastrophic, and it was for periods of time. So I think that's and the risk level says moderate. I would think that that's not true, because I think in the decade between 2000 and 2010, 2009, there were probably at least three occasions when the Peace Bridge itself was closed, once because of 9/11 and twice because of extreme weather situations. So that probably I would take issue with. I don't know, is it possible for us to amend this, or is this something that, as you say, has been created by someone else and just happens to be then part of our plan?
Yes, Your Worship. These last three, as a matter of fact, that were on there, extreme weather, cyber attack, and the terrorism or CBRNE, were all actually lower on the classification by the person that did it. I've raised them up so that they were included in this list, because as the fire chief in Niagara Falls, your neighbor, looking down wind all the time to see the clouds and the weather that hit Fort Erie, and also, you know, being around for many years and with the weather that I know that Fort Erie has faced, I wanted to elevate that back up into the top 10, so that it would be something that would be focused on for exercises and for training. Now, just because it's an 8, 9, or 10 doesn't necessarily mean you can't train on it until you've trained on anything else. It's generally determined by the program committee, who will meet and decide which type of training they'd like to have for that year and which type of exercise they'd like to get involved in.
So, if I might, Mr. Chair, I think the answer to my question is that we could elevate, as an example, where it says extreme weather, likely, I agree with, we could elevate the consequence from 2 to something higher.
That's true. You could do that. There was a process that was undertaken to determine those numbers. Again, the person, I don't believe, was from Fort Erie that calculated
I can believe that.
But, you know, and this is, on a yearly basis, has to be reviewed, and it can be shuffled or new types of hazards depending on the frequency. If you had a number of different things that occurred this year in Fort Erie, and if they were all floods, for example, it may raise or elevate the flood hazard to a higher level, or, you know, you may end up certainly looking at some of the ones down at the bottom with cyber attack being one of the more up-and-coming type things that has been facing many municipalities and organizations. You're likely to want to take a look at how you can fend against that a little bit more.
So, Mr. Smith, if I were to ask you this question, you advise me against it, or would you be indifferent, or would you have another attitude? If I were to suggest that the slight for extreme weather, and I hate to keep banging on this drum, should be more like a 4, because we know what the implications can be, what would your reaction be to my loud thinking?
Well, Your Worship, I certainly wouldn't be surprised by a comment like that. So, and I don't think it's unreasonable. If you're interested in wanting to move that number up, we can do that. This is a living list and it changes, as I said. So if, it's a feeling that you'd like to have that, that increased, we can change the scale and the rating of it.
Well, I'd be interested in changing that to a 4, and I'd also be interested in changing the risk level from moderate to maybe high, because it's, of all of these emergencies that are listed, the one that we have had the most serious and long-lasting effects from would be extreme weather. I know that we've had some of these others, and certainly if we were to have a hazardous material incident, such as we did, I guess, 2 years ago at Rich Products, that has very high risk, which is how it's described, and the consequences could be very severe. So I don't disagree with that. But I don't know. I'll wait to hear what the other members of council have to say. I don't want to throw this out of whack on the one hand. On the other hand, I think we should be realistic, because this is, if you ask people about Fort Erie what the potential for an emergency is, I think most people would immediately think of the weather.
And, Your Worship, again, I don't disagree with that, and I think the people around the table that will be having some input into this would have more experience having lived here and experienced it directly.
Are there any other comments from any other councillors? Okay, seeing none, I do, Mr. Smith, appreciate that you took a more global approach. I actually am... The business I work for, we just ran an 2-day exercise on exactly what you said, terror attack for one of our clients that's a financial institution, and it had to do with a cyber attack in which we had to redeploy, rebring up servers and everything. So I appreciate the thought process on this and the global outlook to the realities that businesses face in business continuity planning and disaster recovery. That's all the comments I have on it. Want to continue, Your Worship?
If I might, I would like to ask Council to consider modifying that hazardous identification and risk assessment chart to bump up extreme weather to a 4 severe consequence with a... I don't know, maybe we could... Would you prefer if we left it at moderate risk level, Mr. Smith?
Your Worship, the consequence, if that's what you're referring to, generally takes into consideration, the harm to people. Now, normally with severe weather, you get power outages and people are definitely disadvantaged for a period of time. But as far as direct injury or deaths that are caused by it is the criteria that's used to consider that. So, keeping that in mind, that's why the number ended up being a little bit lower than you might suspect it would be.
So you needed to be here in 2006 because the whole town was without power. Some parts of the town was without power or were without power for 3 and 4 days. Many homes were damaged. The amount of damage to the trees was so significant that we even got the province to kick in $2 million to help us deal with the problem. We had, and I think you were still working in 2006, we had hydro crews from all over Ontario in here, and we had a lot of emergency responders. People were disadvantaged. I mean, they... particularly elderly people and vulnerable individuals. So that's why I say it seems to me that it's more than just slight consequence. It can be large, and as I said, there were other occasions when the Peace Bridge, as an example, closes because of extreme weather. We typically have hundreds, if not thousands, of transport trucks in our community. They have to be directed somewhere. And if they're not, then they clog our streets and they create even further emergencies. So we have not only the inclement weather, but we also have the transportation issues to deal with. So that's why I mean, I'm just maybe unreasonably stuck on this particular point, and my colleagues on council will either support my views or not, but I think that should be a four. I'm content to leave the risk level at moderate because it doesn't happen all that frequently, but I would like to move that we change that to four, and unless, Mr. Smith, you have some very, very strong suggestions or feelings against that, I'd like to make that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Sorry, with that, the extreme weather, so the probability is a five, that it's likely that it will happen. The consequences is lighter, and the changing risk is a three. So if you change that, those are multiplied to give you your total number in the risk value column. So if are you suggesting that the probability stay at five and the consequence move to a four?
Well, I am, and so what is that? So you're saying you multiply those all?
Right, so that would be your number one hazard in the end, just so that you're aware of what that does to it. It would be a 60.
I'm thinking that it might be our number one hazard. I'm thinking that may be. I mean, a hazardous material spill would be catastrophic for sure, but aside from the spill that we just had last year or the year before on Helena Street, we've had far more issues with weather, extreme weather.
Right.
And with climate change, I don't necessarily see that changing very much. I'd like to move that we amend that to a four and then whatever falls from that.
Councillor Liberts, did you want to wait until the amendment is on the floor? I know you had your hand up to speak, and I know that the mayor deferred once for other councillors. Okay, we'll proceed with the amendment.
Okay.
So the mayor has proposed an amendment for extreme weather under the category a consequence, which is the second category in the package, be moved from a 2 to a 4. Did I capture that accurately? Then we shall put the amendment on the floor for comment or question. Go ahead, Councillor Lubitz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'll support the amendment. And Mr. Smith, just so you know, I'm an electrician, and the storm that the mayor was talking about in 2006, although everybody in town had the days off and they were waiting for all the problems to go away, I was out there on a daily basis, 24 hours a day, taking care of people with generators and making sure that they had gas in them, and then going out and restoring electricity in the homes. Although the power company restored them in the lines, it was our job in the private sector, myself, the company I work with, and all the other electricians in town to restore it from the pole to the house, which we spent days and days with no sleep at all. And so looking at what the mayor's requesting to amend, and being here all my life, I could honestly say that we prepare ourselves more for severe weather storms in the winter than we prepare for anything else. And although we have lots of truck traffic that goes on the Queenie on a regular basis, I don't know that we've had 10 in my lifetime of emergencies, spills and such. We had one a couple of years ago with, I think it was diesel fuel leaking, and the truck tipped over, but that was the last time. And that was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So extreme weather, if we move it up and then it becomes the number one, I think that would be pretty appropriate. So I'm going to support the amendment, and that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Are there any other comments from councillors? Councillor Butler?
I mean, I'm just looking for a little bit of clarification with respect to this now. So if any of these move from one to, you know, to the top, to the bottom, it doesn't really matter because you're going to have to handle the situation as it comes anyway. Is that correct?
Through the chair, there are a number, I think there's 53 or so that are considered 53 different hazards, and they're all scaled, based on their probability. The experiences that you've had before would kind of indicate whether you might have them again in the future, and then the possible consequences, again, referring to injuries and death primarily. And those are the things that really lead this. So if it's one or the other, and your top 10 are going to move around on a yearly basis depending on what happened the year before and what's, you know, being forecast for the coming years. And again, as long as you have a number of the high-end, most probable risks that you use to train with and to exercise with, then you're doing what you should be doing as a municipality.
Okay,
so
thank you.
So I agree with, you know, making those changes isn't going to dramatically change anything.
Right. I agree that weather is something to be considered. I also agree that hazardous spills, whether it's transportation caused, you know, on our roadway, or, for example, a chemical spill at a company located here in Fort Erie that would have extreme negative effects on those living within a 5 or 10 mile radius. I think they're equally devastating. Probably the chemical spill more so than the weather itself. I mean, we're Fort Erie, we're Canadians, we know that weather is going to take place, but I would hate to not have any training as a direct result of moving this one forward, but you're saying that that would not happen, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? On the amendment, you're correct, Councillor Roberts. Seeing none, we'll vote now on the amendment that was proposed by Mayor Redicott. All those in favor? None opposed? That carries. The report as amended is on the floor for comment or question. Councillor Roberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I don't have a page number here, but it's Section 3.3, Evacuation Centers. And Mr. Smith, when I'm looking at this here, I'm seeing that it covers Ridgeway, Crystal Beach, Crescent Park, and Fort Erie, but I don't see any evacuation centers mentioned for Stevensville area. And that's my first comment. And then my second comment would be, have we taken into consideration yet the fact that Fort Erie Secondary School and Ridgeway Crystal Beach Secondary School, or high school, will be closed in September? We're opening our new high school across the street, so we're going to immediately have to replace those two. And then we need an evacuation center for Stevensville as well, I believe.
Through the chair to Councillor Lubertz, we have had that discussion. I discussed that with Chief German, and we recognize that there will be some changes that are required to be made. But again, this is a living document, and it does change as changes are required. So currently, we have that stock to be utilizing, and so it's currently in this document, and it will change when the buildings actually move. So the other issue is that
Stevensville area.
That the Red Cross gets involved with actually determining which buildings are suitable for evacuation sites. So you have to make sure that there's a place that will accommodate, will keep warmth, will have cooking and the ability to prepare food and that type of thing, have facilities that will accommodate a large number of people, or the number that they're at least categorized as. And the Red Cross does an evaluation of those. So the buildings that you see were a result of some of the work that the Red Cross had done with in conjunction with the region, social services. So that's why those buildings are where they are. And again, they're supposed to be expanding on an annual basis. So the next CEMC, who will be the new fire chief, will have an opportunity to look at that and review those things. Sorry, the next emergency management program coordinator.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. So I understand Ridgeway High School and Fort Erie Secondary School, and I guess making an amendment wouldn't be the proper thing to do right now, but maybe after I can make a motion that we contact the Red Cross to see. We have a community center in Stevensville, has cooking facilities, can accommodate 300 or 400 people. So that might qualify, but we have to go through Red Cross to make sure. So I'm assuming that that would be a motion to be brought forward to staff to...
Through the chair, just an answer to that, Councilor Lubberts, I think that it would be most appropriate to refer it to the program committee so that they could make the those decisions and then issue some direction to the emergency management program coordinator to take action on it.
So do you recommend that we do that now or as a motion after?
At your pleasure, but I think it wouldn't be.
We can ask the clerk for clarification. We can add it to the current recommendation, can we not?
You could, but it would have been my suggestion simply to be direction to staff because, as Lee has indicated, it is reviewed by the committee.
Okay, so I think we'll follow the clerk's lead on that as direction to staff.
So we'll make an amendment to direct that? We'll just make a motion to direct that. We'll do that now?
I don't think we have to make a motion at all. We're just giving direction to staff
okay.
at this
so
time.
So staff, I guess everybody's hearing me, right?
It will be attached to the
My mic is on.
Approval.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, everybody heard that?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Councilor Lubberts. Go ahead, Your Worship.
I had one other thing. I noticed on page 20, there's a listing of, page 20 of the package. It's Appendix B, and it talks about the cooperating agencies. And I mentioned it to Mr. Cookett that Canadian Niagara Power seems to have been inadvertently omitted, and I presume that they should be on that list.
Yes, Your Worship. Those are just examples, and it identifies that they are examples of assisting and cooperating agencies. And certainly, Canadian Niagara Power is included in the emergency contact list, the telephone list, and also in the critical infrastructure list. So they are included in that, and should you have the need to have Canadian Niagara Power at the control group table, they would easily be brought into that, and it's expected that they would should you have that that need, like for power outages and severe weather, ice storms, and that type of thing.
Because of their importance, Mr. Chair, because I can't think of an emergency where they might not likely be involved. Wouldn't it be prudent to have them listed here? I mean, I wouldn't want them to think that it's actually page 11 of the Appendix B. I wouldn't want them to think that for some reason they're not as important as the other utility that's mentioned or the school boards or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to make that change.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. And I did, again, want to compliment you on the thoroughness of this report, this plan. This is fantastic. As I told Mr. Cookett, I was very interested in seeing how much power the mayor has, and that hasn't been tampered with, so congratulations.
Don't forget, Councilor Lewis made me the mayor earlier. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I just have one question. You had mentioned that the sites were assessed using a process that the Red Cross. Are you familiar with their process? Do you know what metrics they use?
To you, Mr. Chair, I know that they look at the things that I mentioned. They want to make sure that it has capacity that they can put their temporary beds in, that they have health and sanitary conditions for the people that are going to be in there, that they can prepare food, that they have the ability at least to warm food. So those are the types of things that they look at, and they evaluate them and rate them with weighting so that they can either, you know, be above the grade or below the grade. And then once they're above the grade, then they can be added to the town's list.
I'm just wondering if the Black Creek Community Center and the Stevensville Memorial Hall were considered at all. I know those are smaller facilities, and with the new subdivision build-out, they might fall under the line due to population density in those areas, and that might be why they're not on the list, but I think that they both have kitchens, plenty of washrooms, and I believe the Black Creek Community Center was a school at one time, so it does have several rooms.
Chair, I will make a note for that to be considered in this year's revisions and review.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or comments on the report as amended? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the report? None opposed? That carries. And moving on to new business.
Chair, may I make one comment, please? Sorry. Part of the emergency management program is public education. And through that, we wanted to kickstart it this year. And so we've included a severe weather. Speak of weather. No severe weather. There's going to be a presentation on May 11th at the Leisureplex. And it will be dealing with topics of severe weather in the region, storm chasing, severe weather myths, and emergency preparedness and safety. So it's the first public education event for emergency management for this year, but there should be three or four following that throughout the year.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. And if I could ask that you could pass that information on to our communications director, who I see the top of her head down there. Thank you very much. And if we could publish that on the town social media. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ms. Fessmer. Thank you very much. Moving on to 10.3, new business and inquiries. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Jansen, I'm actually not sure if this question comes to you or not, so I apologize in advance, but we did receive an email this week with respect to a resident being angry in terms of a light being installed at the lighthouse in Point Abenow. And I just wondered, did we facilitate that? Because I didn't know if we...
No. Yeah, we
How
did.
How did that come about?
Well, I can chime in. We had a meeting here probably a couple of months ago with respect to a request to put a light in the lighthouse. It's an LED light. It's significantly lower power than the actual light. And that was the Point Abenow Lighthouse Preservation Society. They were directed to meet with the Point Abenow Association, which they did. They also met with the Museum and Heritage Committee, or whatever it's called, because they also wanted to remove part of the mechanism for the light down to the main floor so that you see it. That was referred to in the minutes of that committee, and in fact, we, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, dealt with that request because the committee did not want to approve that request, and we then had to deal with that specifically. So there had been an adjustment made with respect to the light. The idea is that it's not to interfere with people on the Point Abenow residential area, nor is it supposed to interfere with people, I think, in the Bay Beach area. But I think it's supposed to be pointed at the waterfront park and then out. So if there's been a complaint, maybe the location of the residence of the individual who's been affected would be important. But that was approved by the Point Abenow Association, and up and on June the 10th, there anniversary of the erection of the lighthouse. That's what I know. And there is a continuing concern maybe if we found out the address of the residence.
But council didn't approve any finance towards that, correct?
No,
I didn't think so. Okay, thank you very much.
Just to follow up on Councillor Butler, just a comment. I had inquired with the CAO prior to the meeting about that, and he said it was just for this year for the 100th anniversary, so there is an expiration to it, so it's not like it would be on all the time, correct? So there is an expiration date to it being up there. Are there any other inquiries or new business? Seeing none, we'll move on to the business status report. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back to his worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. Are there any meetings that we need to know of? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Tomorrow evening, we have a meeting with the Environmental Advisory Committee at 5:30 here at the Town Hall in Conference Room 3.
I'm sorry, what time was that at? Did you say 5:30?
5:30, yes.
Any other meetings? Councillor Nutt.
Yes, the annual general meeting for the Chamber of Commerce is on Thursday.
That's right, along with EDTC, and that's at the Buffalo Canoe Club. Any other meetings? Then I will ask for a motion to adjourn. I'm
Thank
looking
you,
your way,
Worship.
Councillor Nutt.
Yes, the council and committee for the town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 8:19 p.m.
All those in favor? That is unanimous. Thank you all.